I have recently experienced this throwing the towel on the bed thing. What in the world? Get your fucking wet towel off my bed.
And your filthy gym bag, too. I almost did a dive roll toward my boyfriend. I was like, get that crap off my clean bed. I wouldn't be surprised if you put it on the bench that had somebody's balls on it.
So. Someone else's balls ended up in my bed because of your gym bag. That was pretty visual.
Hey, Warners, welcome to another episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About.
The podcast that makes business sexy again.
I'm Gina Tremarco, Master Sales Trainer with Sales Gravy. And
I'm Rachel Pitts, Mommy, Wifey, and Loan Officer with U.S. Mortgage, as well as fitness fanatic and creator of the Ultra Fit Lifestyle.
Woohoo! We talked about this the other day. My intro now is so short, and I so love it. It's so like, that's it. That's all I got going on. Yep. That's all I got going on. That's all I
times
need going
a thousand.
Because it's plenty. It's plenty. Plenty of things. Love the gravy and really love today's guest, Liz Wendling, because we really get into sales talk, which of course is a passion of mine. A little bit about Liz, so you guys know about her. So especially if you're into sales and selling, you'll love her. But she's also super fun. So if you're not into sales, still listen, because as always, I think it's an entertaining conversation. But Liz is a nationally recognized speaker, sales consultant, and author of 6 books. Yes, Rachel, I know I'm working on mine. Don't even go there. Her 2 most recent are The Heart of Authentic Selling and Sell Without Selling Your Soul. Liz is driven by the mantra, it's not what you sell, it's how you sell that matters. And she has so many great nuggets to offer on this episode. What did you think of her, Rachel?
I loved her. Her energy is really, really fantastic. And I wrote down one of my favorite points that she made, and that is, if you say that you don't like sales because I don't want to be pushy and I don't want to seem icky, then you are more worried about yourself than what your prospect wants. Mm. And we get deeply into that, and it's just such a good point.
Mm-hmm. Boom. I love how she talked about, I wrote this one down, phrase grenades.
Yeah. It's great. I wrote that down too.
Phrase grenades, language landmines. And there was something else she said, I can't remember, but it was all in that same thing. And it was really at the end of the day about conscious communication. Some of the things that you're saying might be why you're not making money.
Yeah.
Just saying. So even though some people giving me a hard time for using the F-bomb. Sorry, Trisha. One of my coworkers wants to clean up my mouth. it's not the F-word necessarily that could stop the sale.
It depends.
There's another F-word about that actually is hurting your sales. So you definitely want to dive into this episode. It is fun. It's got a lot of great nuggets. Sit back and enjoy this episode with Liz Wendling. Oh my gosh. Liz Wendling, welcome to the Women Your Mother Warned You About podcast. We are so excited to have you here. We have a feeling that you might fit in with us.
I have a feeling too.
After that comment, yep, definitely.
We are so excited. We haven't talked about balls in a while, so that was fun. We're not really here to talk about balls today either, but you never know where this show is going to go.
Balls and sales, they go together.
Hey, balls and sales do go together, because
you need some
have,
balls. Yeah.
You got to have some balls.
Yep.
You got to have some balls. And you've got, I was reading a couple of your articles. There's one I want to dive into on LinkedIn of just some of the best practices that you have laid out. But before we get into that, You know, it's always more fun to like really know someone on a personal level. And, well, we've started to get to know you a little bit personally on wet towels and balls on beds. But could you just give us a little synopsis of your journey that brought you to where you are today? I know you've written 6 books, but just give us kind of a snapshot for our listeners to get some perspective on you.
Well, over probably the last 32-ish years, I've always been in some form of sales, marketing, or business development in my job. And I was always the worst employee because I was always looking to do something that was more efficient or more effective. And I would always say, why are we doing it this way? It makes no sense. And I would always get in trouble. And most of the time got either fired or laid off. And then finally, I just said, I'm sick of this shit. I want to do what I want to do and start my own business. And I did that 14 years ago. And I've been teaching mostly women, but men as well, who love what they do, but they hate to sell. And they have convinced themselves that they can have a business without sales. And I know, finally, when they realize, all right, I get it. I need to learn how to sell myself and my products and services in a way that fits my personality and my style. So I get to do that. And I teach people all over the world how to do that in a way that really fits them and is the most true and authentic to them.
That is so awesome. Good for you.
Love
and there really are people out there who don't like sales.
Just a few. Yeah. A few million. Yeah.
Just a few million people don't like selling. And, you know, I got to keep that in mind because I think there was a time where I didn't like selling and I thought selling was icky. And then I realized that I naturally sell. And I guess it's a mindset. Right. It's a mindset shift. Every time someone would try to recruit me to be in sales, I'm like, I'm not a salesperson, because we've been so conditioned to think of selling as an icky thing. And I think a lot of that has to do with fear of rejection, fear of objections, everything that happens in our brain space because of it. But I was just telling Jeb last night, I'm like, I don't know what I like better, selling or training, because I love training, but
I like both. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I love selling, because he called me last night. He's like, you are a salesperson. You really uncover things. You really like to like dog it out. And I'm like, yeah, I do. I love like turning the rocks over and finding and getting mm-hmm. there. That's exciting to me. But hey, when you have, you know, 3 gazillion people who don't like selling, that definitely keeps you in business.
It does. It does. But the thing that people don't like about selling is they go all the way back to the 80s and 90s and they don't realize we're not there anymore. You have a choice. You have a choice in how you show up, how you want to be, how you want to sell. But they hold on to that old school mindset because it keeps them safe. It makes them say, oh, I couldn't possibly do that. So they get that gives themselves permission to not sell. They give themselves permission to fail because they think selling is like it was in the 80s and 90s. And I say, drop the BS and realize that we're in a different time, in a different world, different technology, and a different way that we can be when we're out there selling. And all you have to do is learn it, embrace it, and bake it into your bones, and you are good to go.
What about those people who don't remember the 80s and 90s, like the younger salespeople? No, I mean, you know, they...
Yeah.
Heard the stories. Yeah. They all heard the stories, right?
Well, and the millennials operate a different way. I actually was talking with my daughter's tutor she's one of those people who started at age 3 and wanted to get on Broadway and trained her whole life for it. Now Broadway's closed. And so we were talking about sales the other day because she's like, oh God, I never could be a salesperson. I'm like, you are a salesperson. Every time you go to an audition, every time you talk to somebody about getting a job, you're selling yourself. She's like, you're right. And then we went into a whole sales conversation and I told her about all these sales leaders like yourself that we run into. And I bet you'll say something similar is like, there's always too much talking. You got to listen more. And you, number one thing that all the sales leaders we've talked to, and we've talked to a lot, say is you have to care, like for real. Yes. Give a shit.
Yes.
And totally. If you don't give a shit, then stop trying to sell to them. Go somewhere else.
And all the people who say, I don't want to sell because I don't like what I have to do, are actually people who are focused on themselves. Boom. So they project out and say, I don't want to be that gross person. I don't want to act like that. But that means the spotlight is on them. Ooh. Versus saying, here's how I want to be. This is how I want to show up. I want to be confident, connected, conscious, congruent, aligned, authentic. Instead, they say, I don't want to be salesy. I don't want to be pushy. Well, good. Nobody wants that either. But get the focus off yourself, put it on the other person, and watch what happens.
You know, that is one of the number one things that I teach in my improv-based training. Mm-hmm. I have a workshop called What to Say When You Don't Know What to Say. And it outlines, like, as improv performers, how improv and sales are parallel. Yeah. And how you can take those techniques in selling. And the number one rule in improv on stage is to make your partner look good. So when you put the focus on making the other person look good, you automatically look good. They look good because they feel validated, and then everybody wins. But the real power in that is that you're taking it all off of yourself, and it actually gets way easier when you start worrying about them instead of yourself. Like, oh, okay, what does this prospect need? How can I help this prospect succeed? How can I make them look like a superstar? How can I help them, you know, prove to their boss that this is a really good idea? How can I make that business successful? When you put the focus on that versus yourself, it gets so easy.
And the conversation changes. All of a sudden, there's a richness and a depth to the conversation. It's two human beings talking. It isn't you all focused on yourself saying, I don't want to say this. What do I say next? How do I handle that objection? That means you're only thinking about yourself. And it's very self-serving. And they don't realize that they're showing up with that self-serving energy. And that's why people don't want to buy from you. It's not because sales is hard. It's not because... it's because you're not showing up as your authentic self. Sales isn't difficult.
People can smell that commission breath.
Yes. It's a bad smell.
That's like the greatest point I have heard in a long time. Just don't make, if you're worried about it, then you're not worrying about what the person needs. And everybody loves to talk about themselves, and they love to tell you what they need. So if you just ask the right question and shut up, then it works out better, right?
Yeah. And getting out of your head and back in your body. That's the thing. If you're stuck up in your head thinking, what's the best line, or how do I say that, or give me the best line for this. No, if you're in the moment, in the flow, not going with the flow, in the flow, there's a big difference. That answer will come to you. That the right words will come out of your mouth. But if you're thinking about what to say to make yourself sound great, you're missing the mark. You're not, it's like improv. It's not going to land. It's not going to go anywhere.
Everything you just said is improv. It is being 100% in the moment, focused on the now.
Yeah.
Not focused on the future, not focused on the past. It's focused on the now, what's happening right here. Not thinking about what you're going to say, not planning it. Now, don't get me wrong here. You have to do some level of planning and prep. You have to plan for objections. You have to think about what those are going to be and have responses ready for that. And you have to be able to pivot from all of that, because you're still going to get some kind of objection or pushback that you didn't plan for. And then you add it to the list and you plan for it for next time. Right. But you have to be so in the moment, because then everything becomes authentic. And if you feel like that something came out of your mouth that didn't make sense, well, that actually is going to engage more, because people are like, oh, good. She screws up too. Or she's not perfect either. Oh, I kind of like her.
And when you have the skills, when you have solid and strong sales skills, and you know you're showing up with the right skills, then that's when you step into the moment, because you know you're properly trained. It's like a surgeon. They know, he or she knows what she's going to do in the operating room, and knows that whatever happens on the operating table, he or she can handle it because of training. So these people who say, I don't need sales skills because I don't sell, are the people who don't get the business because they're not properly trained to step up and do the surgery.
Yeah, but what about those people who are not trained because their companies won't train them, or they don't see the value on the, you know, to do it? I mean, you know,
it's a disgrace. It's a flat out disgrace that someone would say you don't need those skills.
Well, hold on a second. I'm going to play the devil's advocate that what you just said, Gina, if someone's company won't pay for their sales training, then go out and train your fucking self. There's so much out there. Call Gina or call Liz. Like, there's YouTube videos. Like, I've spent a lifetime doing it. I'm not sure I've had sales training paid for ever for me, but Lord knows I've paid for a whole lot.
I did that on purpose to tee that up. So, you know, I know you well.
And that is such a great point, Rachel. You're right. Get it yourself if you're not getting it. But it is a shame that companies are out there saying, oh, we did a training 10 years ago. It didn't work. What the? Seriously? Okay. So you're just going to sacrifice your bottom line and keep letting business walk out the door because you tried something 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in that's a common objection too, right?
Yes.
That is a common objection. We've tried it before. It didn't work. We didn't have a return on investment. They use that as an excuse in their objection, and there's validity to it, but you're not doing your job. If you're selling training, you're not doing your best job if you can't help them through that process, through that pain, and relate to it and validate them. Yeah, you're right. I bet you did not get value from that.
Right. And then get under the hood and find out what they did, what they tried, who was involved.
Yeah.
Was there buy-in from everyone from the top all the way down? Tell me why it didn't work, because that you got to get to the reason there why it did not work in order to be able to get
past
that.
And was the training reinforced? So if you came in, Liz, and you spent a whole entire day, or Gina, training a staff, and I imagine, because I know I've been with Gina in her training sessions before, it's super overwhelming. And you're like, your brain's gone on fire of all these ideas of all the things you want to do and need to do and haven't been doing. And then you're like, and it's so overwhelming. Sometimes you don't do anything. And so if you do invest in training, then you've got to help your company and your employees and your partners and team reinforce it. And like, okay, so what are we going to implement? Right.
And I won't even work with a company who will not allow reinforcement training. I guarantee my results with all my clients. I don't guarantee that you're going to close $1 million worth of business. I guarantee that the skills I train will create a difference. But if I can't do retention, if I can't do reinforcement training, then the money back guarantee goes away. So they have a choice.
Love it. I had moved to a similar model before I joined Sales Gravy, and Sales Gravy, their model, especially now with virtual training, really fits into that. But I had moved into that kind of mindset, you know, every time, and I'm sure you've experienced this, a company comes on and they're like, well, we want to do like a a 2-hour training, and that's all we want to do. And I'm like, in the beginning, I was like, okay. And then I was like, no, that's just not how this is going to work.
Yeah.
You're going to spend this much money because that seems like much more, but trust me, this is the value of it. You know, the training had to be, a minimum of 4 sessions over 3 to 4 months,
right,
with homework in between and management debrief meetings of how we were going to continue to sustain it, right? So it was bigger. It was integrated. It wasn't just training. And you either are going to buy that or you're not going to buy that. And if you're not going to buy that, then buy. I don't want to be, I personally, just from an ego point, don't feel good about taking someone's money and knowing that there will not be a return on their investment because they're going to do nothing. And I've been in pitch meetings where I've literally been put on the spot where I had some manager ask me, and this was like a huge Fortune 500 company, and like it was like out of Mad Men, everybody at the table. And the one guy says, what are you going to do to ensure that this sticks? I said, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Right.
What are your managers going to do? I said, well, I would expect that the managers would hold people accountable. He's like, oh, well, the managers won't be in the training.
Okay, so
you're just setting me up to lose. I don't want to work with you.
Yeah. And that kind of 2-hour training, I call that a Band-Aid on a bullet hole. Yeah, we can do it, but you're going to get, there's going to be some serious problems if we just do that. I don't do the Band-Aid approach. If you want transformation, you have to work through a process. It doesn't take people 2 weeks to gain 100 pounds. You can't try to lose 100 pounds in 2 weeks.
Ooh, that was an amazing soundbite. If that you want transformation, good. What did you say? If
I don't even know.
It was good.
It's being recorded. We got this.
Okay. Yeah, if you want transformation, you're going to have to go through a process.
That's right. Yep. That's right. It takes time.
And you
it
know,
takes backsliding sometimes as well, right? It's like a diet. You lose 2 pounds and you gain 3. You lose 15, you gain 4 back. It will happen, but it's all a process until you calibrate into a way that truly works for you and you can step on the gas and move forward from there.
And Gina, you know, you brought up a really great point that is mentioned in a fantastic article that Liz wrote that you can find on her LinkedIn page called Breaking Bad Sales Habits. There's a bunch of really good points that it'd be good to get into, but Gina mentioned selling the value, which is one of the points that you talk about, that you want to sell the value, and that helps to overcome that price objection that we all know about. Mm-hmm. So tell us more about those, breaking those bad habits.
Well, there's so many of them, but the value one is one I talk about all the time, because unless you know someone else's value, then you really can't sell to someone. You have to find out what they value, what they need. And that's what part of that discovery is all about. I can tell someone, I'm going to save you money, but what if money isn't what they value? I'm going to give you back more time. What if that's BS to them? They don't want that. I have to find out what is the value to you. Then I have to connect my services into their value. It's like it plugs into each other.
Yeah.
And without that, it's like, yeah, that sounds nice. Okay, we're going to think about it. Yeah, why don't you give us a couple weeks versus, holy shit, we got to fix this now. You nailed it. You got it. That's, if you're not speaking to clients that way, you are leaving piles of money on the table.
Yeah, you have to be able to relate back. What is their situation? And then how do what you do, what you sell, how does that tie back? How do you bridge the two between their needs and what you have?
And
you have to get creative with it. I actually was coaching someone. I was observing them in a sales process, and the prospect kept saying what it was he felt that they needed. And the salesperson
telling them,
yeah, and the prospect was like, this is what I really think that we need. And what he wanted was an audit of their messaging and their sequencing of what they were doing. And he said, you know, before we, I don't think we should do training until we get a handle on, you know, are we even taking the right approach with our messaging and our sequencing and the cadence of what we're doing from an outreach standpoint, touch point standpoint. And he kept saying, I want an audit. That's what I want. And the salesperson kept shoving training down his throat. And I was like, listen, he doesn't want that. You cannot sell that to him right now. We know that that's what he needs. We know that in the training, we can actually address that and fix that. But that you cannot keep shoving it down his throat when he keeps telling you this is what I want.
Yeah.
And so you have to find a way to sell them what they want, but give them what they need.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where, you know, salespeople get stuck, because they can't get out of the box of like, well, this is what we offer. We don't offer this. And I'm like, we'll find a way to offer that.
Right. They have to be creative. It's okay to open the blinders a little bit and say, all right, let's talk about that. Let's see what else we can do with that information. And that's where I said earlier, that's the going in the flow. That's being in the flow with people, when you can say, you know what, let's pivot a little, or let's look at that from a different angle. You're still on the same conversation, but you're presenting it in a different way and opening up the edges a little bit more.
Yeah. Mm.
The one point that stuck with me after when I read that article on LinkedIn, Liz, is when you're following up, and you talk about people not following up, but when you follow up. So we had another guest recently, and it struck me that in some of my follow ups, like an email follow up, I would sometimes put, "Hi, I'm just following up on da 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 da," and so we figured out that "I'm just following up" sucks, and so I've taken away "I'm just following up," and I've started, "Hi, so-and-so following up on X item." And then I read in your article, I shouldn't even use that phrase at all. So
that's the other F word.
Help me find a better word, Liz. Help me find a better way.
Well, in both of my books, I write about the other F word, which is following up. And people have been following up the same way for the last 30 years. "Hello, I'm just following up to find out if you got the proposal and had any questions. I'm just touching base, reaching out and checking in." Okay, those are the four that should never leave your lips and never show up in any kind of email. I'm following up, touching base, reaching out, checking in. Nothing screams 1990s quite like that.
Yeah. Damn it. But I love the 90s, but apparently I'm stuck there, so help me.
And it's autopilot language, and all it does is add pressure. When you send a message that to someone that says, "Hey, I'm just following up, I'm just touching base," what that signals to the other person is, "Hey, it's time for you to make a decision. Hey, it's just me. I got a quota to make. I got babies to feed and a mortgage to pay. I need you to sign this, or I need you to move forward."
And if you don't mind me jumping in on this for a second, Liz, and I love that you're on the show with us, because I want your suggestions for this. But for Rachel, the other reason why this is a problem is because of the way our brains function. And so our brains are wired in such a way that when we hear those phrases, we tune them out, because we are so used to people saying those things to sell to us that our brain goes, "Salesperson, salesperson, salesperson, abort, delete, abort, abort." So that's what's happening. The brain is, so you have to like change the pattern.
Right.
We call it pattern painting. Like you have to change the pattern and be a little more disruptive. And that's why people shut down with it. So yes. Liz, what should we be saying?
Well, and we can't change our results unless we change our language. But what I noticed, I read hundreds of emails a week. Before I work with a client, I usually like to get a baseline. But what I notice happening, and most people do this, is they'll send that first follow-up message and then somebody doesn't get back to them. So then they amp up the neediness and say, "Hey, I sent you an email last week. Not sure you got that one."
Me.
And then no one gets back to them again. So they send it again. And, "Hey, I don't know if I got lost in the shuffle, but I thought I would follow up with you again." And then more neediness gets piled on and more neediness.
I thought I would. Another horrible phrase.
Yes. "I thought I would get back to you again. Did you receive the last 7 emails that I sent you?" And all this self-serving neediness is just oozing out of someone. And what they don't realize is that doesn't make someone lean in. It makes them back away and delete. And you get farther and farther away. And then eventually the salesperson gives up. Instead of changing their language, they don't say to themselves, "I wonder if I'm saying something that's causing someone to avoid my messages." They turn it around and say, "I can't believe he blew me off. I put a proposal together. I did this. I said that. I can't believe she won't even get back to me." And they blame the potential client for the actions they're taking. So I tell people, this is where you put the focus on yourself. This is the only place when you've got to restructure your language, your approach, and your messaging. This is where the focus gets turned on to you. So saying, "I'm just touching base, reaching out, checking in, and following up," because of what it does to people, we've got to shift that language. And if you've done a great job in your sales conversation, situations, and meetings, and you've talked to the person about, "How are you and I going to stay in communication? Hey, if I said, 'Hey, Gina, how would you prefer us to stay in communication through your decision-making process?' I want to get buy-in before I freaking leave, before I hang up. I want to know how you and I are going to treat each other with respect through this decision-making process, no matter what you decide." So Gina might say, "You know what? Well, I'm going on vacation next week, or I need a couple of days to review that. Why don't we And Gina might say, touch base next Thursday. And even though Gina told me that, I wouldn't say to her, hey, Gina, you told me to touch base next Thursday. I'd say, hey, Gina, in our last conversation, you suggested that I reconnect with you, or you suggested that we pick up our conversation where we left off. And we do that today.
Well, I think you. So, I think Liz, you'll agree with this too. I think part of that, the other piece of that, is actually setting up the next step so that totally. You're not doing a just checking in. You don't have to just check in if you've already like made a very direct, bold statement of
yes,
great. So in the next step is for us to review this proposal. How's Thursday at 2 o'clock or Friday at 3 o'clock?
Any way that you can make that next step is it sets you up for success. It makes the other person not feel like you're chasing them or annoying them or bloating their inbox with needy messages that don't go anywhere. And that's a perfect pre-step to be able to then get the conversation going. Without doing that, then you've stopped the momentum. Even though the meeting might end, I believe that in that type of messaging and saying to someone, how would you like us to stay communicated? Yeah. When would you like us to reconnect? Even though the conversation stopped, there's still momentum behind it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And again, I think where a lot of salespeople fail is they fail in the having a plan for the momentum of what that is going to look like. And it's so funny because working at Sales Gravy, I have to walk the walk and talk the talk 200%. And I have gotten really good at the next step in every conversation. And it's fascinating to me because no one ever says no to me.
I know.
About the next step.
It's crazy.
Ever. Ever. Everyone sets the next appointment with me every single time.
And it's because the energy and the intention behind that, it's pure and it's you being a professional and they view it as that. And it's like, oh, I like her approach. I like the way she operates. If I work with her, she's going to be this way. And I like that. You are giving someone a glimpse into who you are and how you're going to work with them. And why not do it in the best way you can? All right, I'll catch up with you next week, or okay, I'll follow up with you. It just doesn't work anymore. Step up the game. It is time to step up the game. There's too many, I call those phrase grenades. There's too many phrase grenades in our messaging these days. And even saying, I don't want to bother you. I know you're busy, so I won't take up too much of your time. I know you're swamped, so I'll be brief. Excuse my persistence. Sorry to bother you. And then more neediness gets slathered all over the place. And another phrase grenade, a word bomb, and a language landmine gets dropped. And it blows up the communication. It blows up the sales process. And then people don't understand, what did I do? Or why did they stop communicating with me?
Why don't they like me?
Yeah, I want them to like me. Conscious communication is where it's at.
Woo-hoo. Wow, that was a very good lesson, ladies. Thank you. I've been over here taking notes like, okay. And you know, but this is the thing. We sometimes, because I consider myself a pretty good salesperson, and yet there's always something to learn about yourself. And as you were talking, Liz, I was thinking about the emails that I receive that start out with the sentence, hi, I was just checking if you got my last email. And then I literally delete it. Especially if I don't know what it is. And so that's happening to me. I don't use that phrase, but I have tried to strengthen the I'm following up from I'm just following up. And so clearly I need to step up to the next big girl step.
All the way down to, I hope you had a great weekend. How are you? Big question mark, question mark. What the hell? You don't even know me and you want to know how I'm doing? You don't freaking know me? You really think I thought you sat there and wondered how that stranger's weekend was? I don't believe it. I don't believe it at all. Leave it out. It actually weakens your message and diminishes your credibility because most spam messages start out with, hey, how are you? How was your weekend? I trust this email finds you well. And why set yourself up for failure?
So good. So good and so fucking right on point because I don't know. I've done all those things.
We all have.
I want to reply back. No, this email does not find me well. My mother just died. I got a divorce.
Right?
It's true.
I just spilled my coffee. I didn't get any sleep last night. Fuck you. What do you want? No, I'm not giving you my money.
But isn't it interesting, Rachel? Because you were at, you know, you're saying, oh, this is how you've changed it. And then you described how you'd start deleting those emails and you're not even thinking about it. You have an instant reaction to like delete. And that is that's the brain thing.
Yeah.
That's your brain doing that without you thinking about it.
Yeah. And we have a new phrase now in these unprecedented times. And starting out an email like that, acknowledging. Ugh. And I know people use it. I know they're not doing it to be mean. They're doing it to soften their approach, to look like they care. But it doesn't land on the other person like you truly, truly care. And I'm not suggesting that people start being nasty in their emails. I'm saying rewrite, re-engineer your emails so that the care is in there. It's woven in there. People can still feel it. When you write an email that feels like it was written for them, not a form email. Hi, my name is, and I was just reaching out to. Nobody wants to hear that. Read an email or write an email that feels like you sat down with that person in mind. And that care, that concern comes through without you saying, in these unprecedented, challenging times, you don't have to say that shit. It's in the email and it's felt through there.
Hey, Warners, are you having a great time listening to this episode? We know we are. Hey, if you want to connect with us directly, don't forget you can do that at our website, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com. You can find Rachel, Keith, and myself there, along with all of our social media links, especially Keith, who you can only find on LinkedIn. But that's cool. And now back to the show.
And to be direct, I would imagine, is a lot better. Like, I know, especially in what I do now in mortgage, I learned pretty quickly, because there's hundreds of emails that go back and forth. Nobody wants me to ask them how their fucking day was. They want to know. They want a one sentence email that says, did we receive the appraisal? Like,
that's right. Everybody is getting more messages than ever before. We're at an all-time high. And when you send me a message that just bloats my email with no value in that email, you're going to the trash, and you're happily going to the trash.
You are going to the trash.
Going to the
trash bin. Swipe left in my phone. I have an iPhone. You swipe to the left and then you can trash it. Swipe left, swipe left, swipe left.
Swipe left. Yep.
Swipe and left.
So we have to be very conscious of our communication so it's read, not deleted, so that people, maybe they don't do something with it in the moment, but they don't delete you. You still stay in their inbox. Mm-hmm. Give people the respect people's inbox so much that you don't bloat it with something that's just self-serving with, I'm just following up, touching base, reaching out.
And
I know
here's
you're busy.
Here's another novel idea. Pick up the fucking phone.
That too. Everybody's afraid of the phone still.
Because if you really want to cut through the noise, people are overwhelmed. There's more email than ever because of the pandemic. And sometimes the fastest way to get a hold of someone is on the phone. I've even noticed that I've started picking up the phone more when it rings because I just cannot handle reading any more emails.
Well, and the other, what I've learned lately, because I got away from the phone through the pandemic, I turned into a little hermit. And so I've been back on the prospecting boat again, which it's like riding a bike. You just pick up the phone. And because of these unprecedented times, the only thing that I have to do is say, hey, so-and-so, how's it going for you? Did you have a great year last year in 2020? Well, in real estate, most people around here had a great year. And then let them talk and shut up. And they'll talk for 20 minutes.
And that's what that makes them happy. They're talking about themselves.
And you can find those things that you mentioned, Liz, where you plug into what they need by just letting them talk, by listening.
That's right. Yeah, or you'd say, so Sally, earlier you mentioned your concern around, or Diane, you said something earlier that really struck me about X, Y, and Z. Let's revisit that, where you show somebody, A, you're listening. You said something that sounded important to you, and it was important to me, and it's so important, I'm going to bring it up again so we can finish talking about it. Sometimes people throw things out, and we don't even play those cards. We don't even think that's important, instead of going back and just saying, hey, could you say a little more about that? That struck me as a little strange. Tell me more about that. Get into their world instead of thinking, all right, now how do I close them? That's it, you know, you're missing so many nuggets in there.
You know, I often talk about, and I do this in my What to Say workshop, talking about paying attention to the details. And it doesn't have to be all about business, and it can be a little personal in order to create the connection. And I know one of your books is called The Art of Authentic Selling. And so when we're looking at how can we be authentic and find ways to connect with people, you know, simple things, like I just had a class a couple days ago where, you know, I have a lot of people who sign up for classes that repeat my classes or follow what I'm teaching, uh-huh. and they sign up for every class I'm teaching. And there was one of them on there, and I said, hey, John, it looks like you need a haircut. You growing your hair out? What's going on? Right? And like, there's other people in the class, and he's like, Yeah. I just have really been struggling to go get my hair cut. And so we were talking about, because I do an exercise with them where they actually have to pay attention to the details. They have to turn their cameras off and change their appearance and then come back on camera, and people have to notice the changes.
Oh.
And so it was a great way to like set up that exercise, because I said, how did that make you feel? Because I was able to call that back. Like, I'm like, how did it make you feel, John, when I talked about your hair? And he's like, it made me feel like you remembered me.
Oh, yeah.
It's those tiny little things that any tiny thing that you can call back.
What a gift. It's such a gift you give to another human being when you pick up those little nuances. Even a shift in their facial expression, like, oh, did that look, that what I just said, did that upset you, or was what was that? You had a reaction to that. And people are like, oh my God, you saw that? Yeah, it's a gift you give to people, and we miss the richness of being able to pass on those gifts because we're so up in our freaking head. Get out of your head.
Worried about ourselves. There was something else in your article that stuck out to me that I want, because I found this interesting. You talk about, hold on. Okay. Selling inside your comfort zone. Can we talk about that a little bit? Because I want, like, how can people get out of their comfort zone? Tell us more about that.
Well, the comfort zone is that completely comfortable place where I say the same thing, I do the same thing, I write the same email. It's all very, very safe, and safe in my language. It's comfortable in the way I approach people. I don't poke the bear. I don't say anything that would ruffle any feathers. And I take on the nice salesperson approach. And that's a comfortable place because you're comfortable being there. I don't have to ruffle any feathers or ask people for more clarity when they say something. And what all that does is it makes you look like a compliant salesperson. I'll do anything you need. I'll bend over backwards. I'll jump through hoops. I'll stand on my head. Whatever you need, I'm here for you. I'm showing up as a servant, and it's that servant energy. Versus being an aligned energy. People don't want to do business with a servant. I'm sorry. They don't want to. Go to the restaurant if you want a servant. People want an aligned professional to show up and poke around the edges and say, you know what? I want to go a little deeper into what you just said. I'm a little confused about this. Or earlier you said this, and now you're saying this, and there's a little congruency. And actually poking people's BS that they're trying to sell to you instead of buying it yourself, and being okay with saying, I'm not sure you're going to be a good fit, or I'm not sure that I'm going to be the best person for you. Why don't I give you a referral? And actually talking to people from that higher level place where I'm done being a servant and I'm ready to step in as an aligned professional. And that comfort zone is lethal. It's where poor people live there.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes. poor people.
It's actually
there.
Really interesting to step out of your comfort zone sometimes, because you might be surprised what happens.
Yeah, it's moving out of the comfort zone. Go hire Rachel. She probably knows realtors and can get you a good mortgage. Get the hell out of that town, because it's not where you can build a business. Move out of your comfort zone.
Totally. Liz, you do a lot of different types of training. So what is your favorite? What's your favorite? Do you like one-on-one? Do you like big groups? Do you like, because I was looking at your profile and it looks like you do a lot of different stuff. So.
I have two favorites. One-on-one is always my one-on-one customized work, where I go belly to belly with someone, where we get into their personality, their style, their language, how they want to show up. And we get to create from that place. And that is so joyful at the end of a coaching program with someone, when they say, I could do this, because they feel like it's built for them and not for the masses. So I use the example of like when you go to the eye doctor and it's like, hey, is this clear or is this more clear? And they get to pick one. Do you like this language or this language? Does this sound like you? Or how do you feel about this approach? Oh, I really like that. That's totally me. And then we build from a place that honors who they are. So that's like, you know, all-time favorite for me. And then I do like small group coaching, but not the big 8,000 people in a room coaching, because everybody's in different places. I like coaching a team, salespeople, and I've been working with attorneys for the last 7 years, and working with all of them, they're almost all in the same place to receive the information and be able to role play. So when people are in the same place, you know, fairly close, it feels like the information is received and it can be used so much quicker and implemented a lot faster.
Love it. We have some closing questions that we ask before we get to the final good stuff. So what is your definition, or how would you define the word sexy?
Confident, cool, compassionate, and congruent.
That is good. That's definitely one way. Congruent is not a word that we have had.
I like
as,
congruent.
Yeah, I do too.
It's like that inner and outer, like a noma insides, a noma outside, and it just snaps into place like a Lego.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. And you can tell that about not confident. Like the girls that you see that, the women, excuse me, that you see that they're very beautiful. And yet something's not congruent.
That's
because
it.
Perhaps they're, you know, not very confident on the inside.
Yes.
And they're not quite as sexy as the ones that are super confident.
Totally. There is a look to that.
Yeah. What would you say, Liz, is the best advice you've ever been given?
All right. This is from my dad. Don't half-ass it. If you're not going to do it with your full ass, don't do it at all. And my dad's from the Bronx, and he's just like, why half-ass it? You're going to have to do it twice. So get out there and go do a good job.
Use your whole ass.
Use your whole ass. And I remember him, I was vacuuming the pool one day in our backyard, and I was just kind of not really into it. And he's just like, you're half-assing it. You're going to do it twice if you don't do it right the first time. And I, till this day, I keep hearing that, and everything I do, I only want to do once and I want to do it well. Yeah. There may be some refining of a few things, but I don't like redoing things or forgetting something. Oh, I forgot to send you the calendar invite. That's half-assing it. Full ass is remembering that when I schedule a meeting with someone, I send the calendar invite, I send the homework, I send the recording link. I have a process in my head and I whole ass everything.
Okay, going so forward. Good.
I've been trying to do that this year. This year was part of my resolutions, is like, even to the point of walking by a burnt out light bulb, like I immediately change the light bulb instead of, you know how you do, you're like, oh shit, I need to change that fucking light bulb, and you walk by it 100 times, like, just change, do it, don't have assets.
That's
great. Any advice, Liz, that you wish you had been given?
Oh, that I could truly trust the intuition that lives inside of me, to deeply know that that is my inner guidance. And I would always second guess that. I would let my head take over and I would think that was right because it was logical and it was thought out. Meanwhile, my heart was trying to send me signals all along. That's not the right guy. Don't accept that engagement ring. Don't take that job. And I didn't listen to my heart. And now that is the only place I go for my guidance.
Amen. I love that.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, if people want to reach out to you, get your books, hire you, know you more, have coffee, all the things, what is the best way to reach out to you, Liz?
They can just go to my website at lizwendling.com and all my books are on amazon.com and LinkedIn, Facebook. Just look me up. Yeah. There's not a lot of Liz Wendlings out there.
Go to her website. She's got some really awesome articles as she does on LinkedIn as well. So highly recommend that you go check that out. It was so much fun having you. We have to have you back because you are a little firecracker.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've got one question for you, Liz, because this happens with me a lot with people who have written multiple books.
Okay.
I go and look on Amazon and there's 6 books, and which one should someone start with?
Okay, great question. I wrote 2019, I wrote the Sell Without Selling Your Soul is a book for women who love what they do but hate to sell. And then the book that the follow-up to that is called The Heart of Authentic Selling. And that's the one that's for men and women. It's for people who want to cut right through the BS and understand what it is that people want in a sales conversation these days.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I get overwhelmed with people with all these books, which is also kudos to you. Like who Gina works for, Jeb Blunt has like multiple books too. Does. And Gina's got a book that's coming out soon. So. It's going to be so good.
Okay, just for the for the record, I said something to Jeb last night because I'm building out this new course, Spontaneous Selling. And I said, I think this is the book. I'm like, I think Spontaneous Selling is the book. Because we were having a conversation about building courses and how sometimes like you build a course because of what the client asked for. And then he's like, and then it turns into a book. Like, right. So I said, I think that's going to be Spontaneous Selling. I said, I think that's the book. And he goes, well, I might know a publisher.
Did you buy the URL yet?
Oh yeah, I've actually owned Spontaneous Selling for years.
Awesome. That's it.
We're ridiculous. If I think of an idea in the middle of the night, I buy the fucking domain. Me too. I have like so many.
Me too. I turned a $12 domain into a $5,000 payout and I took a cruise to the Mediterranean with it. I bought the domain Evolved Selling and I just parked it, didn't know what I wanted to do with it. And I got, there was a company out there called Evolved Selling and they wanted my domain and it wasn't for sale unless they could come up with $5,000. And I went on the best 2-week cruise in the Mediterranean.
We need to inventory.
That's actually a really,
we need to inventory our domains.
Seriously. So I do that all the time too, Rachel. Constantly buying them, just park them and then
spontaneous selling I've had for a while. So that is going to, and I do have a Spontaneous Selling e-course that's on Sales Gravy. And every time I get royalty checks, Jeb goes, the studio waits for you. You can come and make more. Because every time he tells me like how much money my payout was, I'm like, that's the money I make while I sleep.
Do it, Gina.
I should be making more.
Do it. Yeah. Do it. Do it.
It's coming. Awesome. All right. Hey, Liz, once again, so much fun having you on the show. Warners, if you want some more of Liz, go to lizwendling.com. If you want some more of us, because how could you not?
How could you not?
Go to womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com for all the things. That's where you can find me and Rachel and the very elusive, what's his name? Keith Walters, our co-host that every now and then we see him here. I think he went out for milk a couple months ago. And if you really enjoyed this episode, especially if you're in sales, please share it with a colleague because maybe they will get something out of this as well.
And if you would be so kind as to hop over to iTunes and give us a review, it helps us spread more love to the world.
Awesome. That's it, Warners. We'll see you next episode.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah. Don't.
It doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
Women Your Mother Warned You About is a Pod About It production. You've got a great idea. Let's pod about it. Visit podaboutit.com for more information.
Woof, woof. Monkey, monkey.